Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, 10th chapter. Today's verses are 22, 23, and 24. 23, 24, and 25. Yeah. And 24 has the purport, so we'll do 23 together, 24 responsively, and then 25 together. Okay? 23. Nahyam maya nitirtani na devas chetano jita te punantyurukalena yuyam darshana matrataha. Mere bodies of water do not constitute holy places, nor are lifeless statues of the demigods actual worshipable deities. Because external vision fails to appreciate the higher essence of the holy rivers and the demigods, these purify only after a considerable time. But devotees like you purify immediately, just by being seen. 24, we'll do responsively. Brahmanebhyo namasyamo. Yes, marupam trayimayam. Vibratyatma samadhana. Tapaswadhyaya samyamai. Brahmanebhyo namasyamo. Yes, marupam trayimayam. Vibratyatma samadhana. Tapaswadhyaya samyamai. Brahmanebhyo namasyamo. Yes, marupam trayimayam. Vibratyatma samadhana. Tapaswadhyaya samyamai. Please chant.
Tapaswadhyaya samyamai.
Brahmanebhyo
25. Oh, sorry, the purport by the, translation by the disciples of his, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. By meditating upon the Supreme Soul, performing austerities, engaging in Vedic study, and following regulative principles, the Brahmanas sustain within themselves the three Vedas, which are non-different from Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and me. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto the Brahmanas. Please repeat. By meditating upon the Supreme Soul,
performing austerities,
engaging in Vedic study,
and following regulative principles,
the Brahmanas sustain within themselves
the three Vedas,
which are non-different from Lord Vishnu,
Lord Brahma, and me.
Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto the Brahmanas. Purport. A pure devotee of the Supreme Lord is considered the most elevated of Brahmanas, since all spiritual endeavor culminates in the loving service of God. And 25 we can do together.
Shravanardashanarvapi Mahapatya kinopiva sudhyeranantya jaschapi kimusambhashanadibim.
Translation. Even the worst sinners and social outcasts are purified just by hearing about or seeing personalities like you. Imagine then how purified they become by directly speaking with you.
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dinabandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gorangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Suti Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye. Panchakalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shrivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for being here this morning, and I ask for the blessings of all the senior devotees that I can speak from Shastra, and I speak coherently, and I don't forget anything that I was hoping to say today, that it makes sense to everyone and inspires you. So we've been reading about Markandeya Rishi, of course, and how Goddess Uma and Lord Shiva came upon him as he was in trance, and they were drawn to him, and she especially wanted to go there and to have his association. And so they arrived there, and yesterday we heard Madhumati Prabhu speak very eloquently about their arrival there, and we heard about the heart of a Vaishnav and what is inside the heart of a Vaishnav. And so at this point now, Lord Shiva, he begins to, as we say, throw sweet words at Markandeya Rishi, and he begins to glorify him. So one in the first verse that we read, it says, "Mere bodies of water do not constitute holy places, nor lifeless statues of the demigods actual worshipable deities. Because external vision fails to appreciate the higher essence of the holy rivers and the demigods, these purify only after a considerable time. But devotees like you purify immediately just by being seen." So this is very similar to another verse that's in the first canto, which we'll be coming to again in a few months, I suppose. So this is from 1.1.15. Yat pada samshraya suta munaya prashaymanaya sadhya punantyupashprishta sardhunyapo nusevaya. O Suta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. And I'll just read a little bit of the purport. Pure devotees of the Lord are more powerful than the waters of the sacred river Ganges. One can derive spiritual benefit out of prolonged use of the Ganges waters, but one can be sanctified at once by the mercy of a pure devotee of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that any person, regardless of birth, as Shudra, woman, or merchant, can take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and by doing so can return to Godhead. To take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord means to take shelter of the pure devotees whose only business is serving are honored by the names Prabhupada or Vishnupada, which indicates such devotees to be representatives of the lotus feet of the Lord. Anyone, therefore, who takes shelter of the lotus feet of a pure devotee by accepting the pure devotee as his spiritual master can at once be purified. Such devotees of the Lord are honored equally with the Lord because they are engaged in the most confidential service of the Lord, for they deliver out of the material world the fallen souls whom the Lord wants to return home back to Godhead. And so, and then Prabhupada goes on from there. So this is why Lord Shiva and Uma are so attracted to Markandeya Rishi, because he's a pure devotee who's taken full shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And in another verse, this is from the 10th canto, I believe. Samashrita ye padapala vaplavam mahatpadam punya yasho murare bhavam buddhirvatsa padam param padam 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 yad vipadam natesham. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Muradi, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Padam Padam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So these pure devotees are so attractive because their goal is Vaikuntha. They're always thinking of Krishna. They're not attracted to the place here where there are material miseries. There are material miseries, and there is danger at every step. So we see that's what it's like here. I read a story once, a news article about a man who was killed, actually. There was a storm, and a tree fell on his house, and he was in his house on the couch, you know, just, and you think, okay, somebody's just home, laying down in their couch, maybe watching TV or something, and they're not thinking they're going to die. But the tree fell on him, and he was finished, just like that. So the material world is like that. It's danger at every step. The other day I was driving home, and you probably all were out as well. It's just a few days ago, there was like this really heavy rain all of a sudden. It was quite torrential. It was really scary, actually. And I was on 441, and I was thinking, should I pull over? But then I don't want to park under any trees. Should I move over to the other side? Then I might get run over by another car. Or should I just keep on going? I mean, it was quite frightening. And then I was thinking, but at least the one thing that was giving me solace was that I was coming from, I had gone out on door-to-door book distribution with Sri Vrindavan that day. And so we were coming from there. And I was thinking, well, I mean, not that, and I'm not saying that I'm not afraid to die, because I'm nowhere near that advanced. But I was thinking, but at least, you know, at least I'm coming from doing something that is pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. At least I'm coming from performing some activity that benefited not only myself, but also the people that we came in contact, and it's permanent benefit. Whereas, you know, along that road, there were so many cars and so many people, and how many people were in the middle or coming from or on their way to doing something that was actually going to make them a permanent spiritual advancement. Prabhupada said that 99.9% of the population are not interested in learning and hearing about God and surrendering to God. So we can hear that and we could become discouraged and think, oh man, 99.9, that's hardly anyone. But at the same time, he also says that if we can change, if less than 1%, less than 1% of the population becomes purified, we can change the world like that. So then it's like, okay, less than 1%, that's not so bad. So with that we can do, and we can do that by sharing Krishna consciousness with as many people as we can. I'm just coming from New York, where I was fortunate enough to be present for the Rath Yatra, and there's a whole 3-day celebration there, and it's now called the Hare Krishna Festival, and the focus has really become to preach as much as possible. And it was really very sweet. The first day there was a kirtan at Tompkins Square Park. So we know devotees, there are so many devotees who are very expert in kirtan. But a lot of the times we do the kirtan in here at the temple or in more secluded places, which is also, that benefits the world as well. But this was extra nice because it was out in the public. And everyone could see, you know, how nicely the chanting was going on. And of course, we were at the park where Prabhupada first sat and chanted and started the whole movement. And then the next day was the Rath Yatra, and then, of course, the big kirtan in the city. And oh, and another thing that I really wanted to mention was, so Friday, the first day after the Tompkins Square Park, there was Harinam at Times Square. And so if you're familiar with Times Square, it's like, it's the center of New York, and it's a very, very busy place. So many people, tourists and full of the advertisements all around. And so there was kirtan there as well, and lots of books were being distributed. And it was really amazing. You probably saw the videos. Just so many nice devotees, very senior devotees chanting, and people were dancing like anything. And I mean, it was so pleasing to the heart. And the most pleasing thing to me was seeing, you know, you look up from that spot and you see all these ads. And all the ads are really just encouraging people to follow sinful lifestyles. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. That's what it is. It's really just like, not even, it's just like pushing it on you. Do like this, do like this. This is what's going to make you happy. And we know that that's not true. And so to see that, but then there are the devotees in the middle and just, you know, belting out the holy name and everyone dancing and so many, all the people just watching and being amazed and also participating themselves. So it was quite ecstatic. Yeah, so Markandeya, so Lord Shiva is saying all these wonderful things to Markandeya Rishi because he's a pure devotee. And we like to hear about these things because we get purified. And the idea, and we can also become pure devotees like that. We should think like that, that this is wonderful, and we shouldn't think that, but it can't be me, this can't happen to me, it can. And some people might say, well, oh, you know, there's no pure devotees in ISKCON, or after Prabhupada, you know, that was it. And of course, Prabhupada has a position that's unique and singular, and that can't be replaced in any way. But at the same time, Prabhupada came here because he wanted to make pure devotees. That was his purpose. So if there are no pure devotees, then that's like saying that his mission was unfulfilled. And even back in there's that story from the, it was like late 60s or 70s, where the reporter was asking, so how many pure devotees are in your movement? And Prabhupada asked, I believe it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, how many pure devotees? How many devotees do we have now? And it was like, I don't know, 75 or whatever. And Prabhupada said, 75. So what was he thinking? Was he just flattering? No, because we understand that if a person is following the instructions, sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master, then we also can attain to that position of being a pure devotee. And Prabhupada was already seeing that. And so if there were 75 back then, how many must there be now? And even if there's only one left, that's a lot still. And how do we know a pure devotee? Well, the thing is, we have to, in order to think that someone is a pure devotee, we have to be able to see that. We can't see that with eyes of envy. So this is the problem. This is what's happening a lot. We have to see with the proper vision. For example, just not too long ago, we had a visit by Mahavishnu Swami. And so he was here for a couple days, and it was the first time that I had ever been in his physical presence. And I had heard about him from my son, because my son is fortunate enough to travel with him pretty regularly. And my son told me that Maharaj gets up, wherever he goes in the world, he gets up every day, 3:30, he gets up for Mangal Arati. And so there's no, you know, jet lag, or I'm tired, or I need a break, or whatever. He's doing this. And we know, just coming to Mangal Arati at your home temple regularly, that's a lot. That's saying a lot right there. That's an austerity that we perform to please our spiritual master. I feel very inspired, first of all, by all the devotees here who come regularly, I just want to name two in particular, because I was working, well, I still work, but I was working with Mother Sukada and Madhurya Leela. You know, they were teaching at the school where I work, and I saw that they would go to Mangal Arati and come to school and work. Same number of hours as me. So because of that, then that inspired me that, okay, I mean, they're doing it. It's not like something that's impossible. They're doing it. So then let me try as well. And so that this is association. We see devotees who are doing amazing things, and then we get their mercy, and we want to try to do the same as we want to try to do the same, follow in their footsteps. So there's that. Oh, so I was talking about Maharaj. So that's even, so just coming regularly is a big deal here. And then, you know, wherever you're close to. But then when you're traveling is very difficult. So imagine going from one country to another. One day you're in one time zone, and 2 days later you're in another time zone. And still getting up to attend Mangal Arati. And travel is not fun. It's an austerity. Traveling alone is a big deal. Actually, I was watching a class where Vaisheshika Prabhu was talking about, you know, he likes to look up the meanings of words. So the meaning of travel actually means to travail. Oh, actually, I have it here. Travel, word origin, travail. Painful, of laborious effort. The origin is tripalium, which means instrument of torture. So that's travel. And you know, now you travel and you see how things have really degraded, like on the airlines. You know, they want you to pay. They nickel and dime you for every little thing. You have to pay. You have to pay now to choose your seat, you know. You have to, soon they'll be charging you to use the bathroom. You'll have to pay for that too. It's terrible. And then, so travel is difficult. And yet there he is, talking about Maharaj, you know, going to all these places, traveling regularly and still getting up. So why does he do that? Is he doing it because he wants to be famous? Well, he's already famous, so he doesn't have to do that. He's 73 years old. He's not a young man. And still, he's doing like that. So why? Because he wants to please Srila Prabhupada. So that's amazing. When we came, I was fortunate by Jagannath and Jai Nitai's mercy. I was able to ride in the van with them when they took him to Jacksonville Beach for Harinam. So on the way back, after we got back, we dropped him and his servant off at the men's ashram. And when Jai Nitai went inside, and when he was coming out, I saw him pick up Maharaj's shoes, and he was shaking the sand on his head. And you know, why does he do that? Because we want that mercy. We want the mercy of the devotees who are taking on so much austerity to please Srila Prabhupada. We try to get their mercy. One other thing about Maharaj, I saw him again in New York. And he, we went on Harinam. And you know, somebody might think, oh, well, to go on Harinam every day is not, it's, you know, it's no big deal. You're just chanting. But it's a lot of energy. It requires a lot of energy. I went out with them 2 days. I went out with them also when I was in Mayapur. And it's, you know, after like the second or third day, I was like, it's hot. I'm done. I'm good. But devotees who are very merciful, you know, you have to be really merciful and loving to take that on and to do it regularly. So one thing that I saw him do in New York was, which was amazing to me, I had never seen a sannyasi in particular do this, was beg. So we were out and he beg. So he, you know, in the middle of the Harinam, it's kind of towards the end. So he goes up, there's these fruit vendors out there. We're just, you know, in the streets. And he goes up to him and he puts his hands out like that to the fruit vendor. And then the guy gives him a banana. And so then Maharaj, he breaks the pieces off, and he was giving everyone little pieces. He was actually feeding the brahmacharis, like putting it directly in their mouths. So the ladies didn't get that part, but I made sure to get a piece of that banana though, a different. So anyway, so it's very inspiring. And then there are, you know, there's not only that, there's devotees that we see every day. They're not every day. We see even here in our community, there are devotees who have very difficult situations. And some devotees, I can think of one in particular, who just, it seems like, you know, every time they turn around, this is such a nice devotee, and they always have, and there's something happening, some major challenge happening in their life. And in spite of that, still, they're coming to the morning program. Still, they never leave the lotus feet. They never leave the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. And we see that. And that's just, it's just incredible. We see devotees who take, talking about austerities, we see devotees who bring their children, we don't see any right now, but there were some this morning, who bring their children to Mangal Arati, or bring their children to the morning program. That's an austerity. And why do that? To please the pure devotee. And it, that's, again, is not something that's very easy. When I was living at Gita Nagari, I used to bring, not every day, of course, but I would bring my kids for Mangal Arati sometimes. And it was, I mean, it was, it was an austerity. And then you, not only that, you have to do it in a way that you can't just drag them. You know, you want it to, so that they feel happy doing it. So it requires some intelligence, you know, how to do it, and but still have them feel happy about it. But then you see later on that the benefit is there. When you take on that austerity, or any austerity you take on for Krishna, the benefit is there. We can also see examples of devotees who take on lots of responsibilities. You know, they take on big responsibilities in order to please Krishna. They become maybe they become temple president of a place where there's already lots of senior devotees and not so senior devotees, and everyone has their own opinion about what should be done and what should be done and what should not be done. But still, they, despite all the issues, or sometimes they have to deal with things like kids putting paper towel down the drain and causing, you know, thousands, hundreds of dollars of worth of damage. And still, they go on every day, and they show up at the morning program, and they do what they need to do. So why? Not for fame, but for pleasing of the spiritual master. So if we look, you know, with the right eyes, we can see there are pure devotees. There are devotees who are they're performing devotional activities purely for the satisfaction of their spiritual master. And even if there's some tinge or whatever of, you know, of mixed or whatever is in there, you know, of course that could be there. But still, if we keep going. And we pray to do things in the right way, then, you know, eventually we can come to that completely pure platform. So that should be noted, and it should be glorified. So Lord Shiva is glorifying Markandeya Rishi, and we can glorify the devotees that we see on a regular basis. This glorification of devotees, let's see, there's a little thing I wanted to read. Okay, so this is there's a way to give glorification and a purpose for it, and then there's a way how we should respond when we're the ones who are being glorified. So this is a little, I'll keep it down here. This is a question to, this is from Radhanath Swami. Someone asks, when one Vaishnav, a devotee of the Supreme Lord, praises another devotee's devotional qualities, what should be the mood of one praising, and what should be the mood of one accepting the praise? Answer. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur condemned flattery. In the material world, people praise others because they want to get something in return for that praise. One sometimes praises a politician because one wants help from that politician's political powers. One sometimes praises a rich man because one hopes to get some money from that rich man. That is flattering. But when it comes to praising a devotee, one shouldn't have this mentality. It should be done as a regulative principle as given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to purify our hearts. For glorifying a devotee has that effect. So we do it because Lord Chaitanya says that this is how we glorify, this is how we cleanse our own hearts. But the let me just touch on that. So I'll stop with that for a minute and then go into, this is another quote from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And this is Lord Chaitanya. Mahaprabhu explained how to atone for offenses to the Vaishnavas in answer to a Brahmin's question. So Mahaprabhu says, "Listen, Brahmin, if someone eats poison, then he must take ambrosia through the very same mouth. Then the poison will be digested and the body will become immortal by the power of the divine ambrosia. Now let me answer your question. Whatever blasphemes you have unknowingly made are exactly like, blasphemies you have unknowingly made are exactly like poison which you have eaten. Now you must use the same mouth to constantly glorify Krishna's name and qualities, which are like ambrosia. You have used this mouth to insult the devotees. Now use it to glorify them. Glorify the devotees as the best of humanity. Glorify them in songs and poetry. I will destroy all the poison of blasphemy through the ambrosia of the ecstasies of Krishna's glories. You have all unknowingly committed offenses. This is the truth. If you should stop all kinds of offensive activity and simply engage in praising Krishna and his devotees, then you will be free from all the sins you have committed, however numerous they may be. You will not be able to achieve the same results by millions of atonements." Millions. So then back to the second part. So now back to the second part of answering the question that was posed to Radhanath Maharaj. So the second part, "But the person being glorified should be very careful not to keep it for oneself. Then he or she will develop serious indigestion. Any praise that comes, one should have a philosophical understanding. Really, I'm not the doer. If it wasn't for the mercy of the great saints like Srila Prabhupada and his associates, for what would I be praised for? Would I be following the principles of bhakti? Would I be chanting the holy names? Would I be performing devotional service? If it wasn't for the association of the devotees protecting and sustaining me, where would I be? If it wasn't for Krishna in my heart, who is giving me intelligence and abilities, giving me the power to speak, what could I do? So we should never take credit. We should give all glories to those from whom we are receiving our power and mercy. If we keep any praise for ourselves and we think we are the doers, that will create havoc within our hearts. We should appreciate the affection of the person praising us, but the content of what he is saying, we should understand, belongs to Krishna and to those who are giving us that mercy of Krishna." So I had an experience not too long ago, actually, where I discovered that I had some indigestion. When I was in New York again, my son was getting second initiation, And so it was a very sweet ceremony. It was really, really beautiful. It was at the Bhakti Center. And whenever I go to New York, I am always treated very nicely, I have to say, because my sons have served in different capacities there. And they, by Krishna's mercy, they have a nice reputation. And so the devotees are always very kind to me. And I never really thought that I was attached to that nice, to the nice words and to being treated like that. And I always say, oh, it's my guru's mercy and it's Krishna's mercy. But the way you can tell is how you respond when you don't get it or if someone says something that's not nice to you. So I had that experience. I'm there at the Bhakti Center and I'm sitting, and I got there early. I got a front row seat, and then my god sister came and she sat next to me and we were talking, and then later, and then slowly, you know, devotees start to fill in and it was getting really crowded. And then my other god sister comes and she sits with us, and then I stood up to greet her and I was hugging her and standing up, I'm talking with her for a few minutes. And I'm really feeling like, you know, my son's getting initiated and I'm in this nice place and everything is beautiful and I'm like floating, you know. And then so I turn around and I see that the devotee behind me, he looked like he wanted to say something to me. So I'm turning around and maybe subtly I was thinking, oh, he has something nice to say to me because, you know, it's my day, you know. So I turn around. And then I noticed that he looks like kind of angry. And he says, sit down so other people can see. And I was like, you know, and I felt like, and I was shocked because I was shocked at my own self because I felt angry. I felt angry. I felt like, you know what, the program hadn't even started yet. Why is he talking to me like that? I mean, I didn't say this. But this is what I was thinking. Why is he talking to me like this? And then I felt like this. You know when cats, when they kind of hiss and their backs kind of go up like that and their hairs stand up. So I felt like there was a cat like that and she was like right on my neck. And I felt like I wanted to say something to this devotee that was really not very nice at all. But I did not. And I managed to at least just say, Prabhu, I'm just saying hello to my god sister, which didn't even make any sense. But I just had to say something. Something had to come out of my mouth, and I had to keep it from being violent, you know. And so I sat down, but still, it wouldn't go away. It was still disturbing me, like in my ear, this little demon was like, why he said this? And then later, I found that actually his not one son, but he had two sons who were also getting initiated. One was getting first, and the other one was getting second. And he wasn't. And I realized as the program progressed, I was like listening to the program, but at the same time processing my experience. And I was realizing that I totally had like the wrong mood, and that I was, that it meant really that I was attached, because he didn't say something nice to me like I was thinking, and he was seeing me as like the bag of bones who was blocking his vision. He couldn't see his sons who were getting initiated as well, you know. So I had to really process that and kind of understand that impurity that is still there, but it's okay because still, you know, eventually it's a gradual process, and I know I have full faith that with the performing of devotional service that desire for being, for pratishtha, for being treated in a certain way, that will go away. You know, we know the story of Bhrigu Muni, how he was testing Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu, and when he kicked and Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma became angry with him. But when Bhrigu Muni kicked Lord Vishnu, what did Lord Vishnu say? Yeah, he said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Did I hurt your foot with my chest? I'm so sorry." You know, so that example is there, and then I was thinking, yeah. So if I had been in the proper mood, I would have just really felt like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhu. Let me," and I just sit down and get out of the way. So I did sit down, but you know, there was a whole lot going on internally. But anyway, as I said, you know, slowly, gradually, that point will come. I think maybe we'll end there. Is there anything else? Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention quickly was another thing that was mentioned in the verses was that mere bodies of water do not constitute holy places, nor are lifeless statues of the demigods actual worshipable deities. So what does that mean? So I listened to a class on this verse actually by Burijan Prabhu, and he said, and he was talking about something which I've actually seen, how in Trinidad I saw that when they have, they do the, not the devotees obviously, but they do Durga Puja, like the Hindus there, and they make these, they worship Goddess Durga for 9 days or something, and they make these deities, and they make the deity of Goddess Durga, and then they pray her and they ask her for, you know, their whatever material thing that they want, and then at the end they take the deity and they put the deity in the ocean, you know, like that. So it's kind of like, okay, here's, you know, here's, it's like saying, here's God, and okay, God, I made this form and now you give me what I want, and then at the end I'm just going to throw you in the ocean, you know. And I was thinking how you know, by Prabhupada's mercy, we learn how the proper mood in which to serve the deity, that the deity is not there, you know, just to ask for material things. But Krishna extends himself in that form so that we can, because of his mercy, so that we can actually do practical hands-on service and learn how to serve him properly. And then, you know, and from there, we develop a relationship with the deity by through service, because relationship comes by service. So then when we have that, we develop some affection, and then from there we have to also spread that affection and to the devotees, because we can't just have devotion relationship with the deity, because then we remain on the Kanishtha platform. So we have to take that, but we have to start somewhere, so we have to do it. And that's kind of my plug for, you know, we have these very beautiful deities. They're so sweet. And it requires a lot. It takes a lot to take care of them. But it's not an austerity, really, because they're actually taking care of us, you know. The service goes on very nicely by the mercy of Mother Nitai and so many devotees who do so much service. But then it becomes challenging, like in the summer, for example, devotees go away. And so there's always a need. My point is that there's always a need. There's always something that can be done, even for people, even if you don't have even if you're not initiated, or even if you don't have second initiation. There's always something that can be done. We always want to see the deities as the center of our life and our community. And so we put ourselves out and we're really not putting ourselves out. It might feel like, oh, I'm giving up my time. Sometimes maybe devotees are a little afraid to make a commitment, you know, like Mother Dandakesh, who comes every day and she dresses Lord Nrisingadev so nicely. And the gurus. So you know, we might be afraid maybe of making some commitment. But the commitment really is everything is really for our benefit. it seems like it's for Krishna's pleasure, but it's really for our benefit. And what else can come before that? So there's so many things that can be done. So we never want to be in that mood of just seeing the deity as, you know, as a lifeless deity who just we just get something from. There's one last story about, I can't remember all the details, but I believe it was in New Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was standing before Radha Vrindavan Chandra, and he, and devotees maybe were saying, you know, how beautiful they were. And Prabhupada said, yes, but we have to, but he was, maybe like a tear was coming, and he was saying, yes, they're very beautiful, but we have to be careful that they don't, that we don't see their service as a burden. So that possibility is there. So it's something to look out for. And we can avoid that by engaging, like Mother Madhumati right now is engaging in the deity service by making such nice garlands. And we see Mother Mahamaya sewing nicely for the deity. So there's so many ways, so many things that can be done. And yeah. We'll just read the last verse again. The one that had the purport was 24. By meditating upon the Supreme Soul, performing austerities, engaging in Vedic study, and following the regulative principles, the Brahmanas sustain within themselves the three Vedas, which are non-different from Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and me. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto the Brahmanas. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu? I certainly hope so. 10 years from now, hopefully and that's what happens is Maya, she'll test us. So the tests come regularly. They come regularly. So hopefully by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, the next time that test comes for me, I'll pass with a higher score. He was looking at his son. He wanted to see his son. You know? I got it afterwards.
Thank you for your rich, inspiring class. And
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Thank you for that. I was in Publix, I think it was just 2 days ago, actually, and I was buying flowers. And I was coming from the temple, so I was, you know, and this woman said, oh, are you going to make one of those wreaths? And so she was familiar, and then I asked her some questions, and someone that she worked with had given her a garland and like that. And yeah, so and then I gave her a book because she was already, you know, so appreciative, you know. And I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm coming here to preach. I was just buying flowers. You know? Oh, Marumatipavu. Well, first, I mean, understanding for one that I'm actually not doing anything, that actually everything is because of the mercy of my spiritual master who inspires me and inspired so many. So, yeah. And I also get inspiration from nice devotees like yourself and Shesha Prabhu. I always call them the goddesses. They have two daughters that are so not only beautiful outwardly, but inwardly. And then there's, you know, devotee. I mean, there's so many devotees who give inspiration just by being themselves. So by seeing that and by hearing from my spiritual master and hearing from Srila Prabhupada and remembering what my life was like before, so those things push me to try to be serious. So thank you all for your inspiration. And Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.